Okay, looks like the cross is a little bit less today with the snow outside. I see a couple people online. Hello, can you hear me? Yeah, I'm sharing my screen and I'm on there. Yes. Okay. No one's yelling at me. Unmute yourself and yell at me if you can't hear. Snow started. I thought the first thing, we're going to talk about seeding materials today, but then on Thursday, we're going to start talking about use of radars. So I thought we'll look at the radar loop for my stuff to keep you wise of a snowstorm. Anybody from Bismarck? There's been lots of snow out there. Here we go. Very lot of snow. We got yellow, we got blues in there on this. And this is just the reflectivity values. On a storm like this, a lot of times they like to use the temperatures of these to disseminate between the rain and snow. So, but it looks like there's quite a bit of snow all over North Dakota today. So, hopefully we see them blue bands coming up here. Oh, see, look at that. That blue area is coming right past us now. So, radius display. And high refractivities with this Colorado road that's coming through out west. They're getting lots of a precip to help with their drought out there. And we're pretty much on the heavy snow right now. So I have that. And then I have lots of stuff to cover today. I want to try to get through a whole bunch of material if I can. And I know, I guess when I didn't do it last week, people asked me for my presentations. So go to the website and let's hope I got my presentations on there for today. So we got dry seeding or dry ice seeding, seeding agents, and then equipment and methods. And there's a little bit of a overlap between some of these topics. So maybe you'll see the material in a little bit different ways a couple of times here. And then we got the questions assignment due on Thursday. And then we'll talk about radar, a nice long description of the radar and then maybe applications of that. And then we'll have an exam on the 28th at the end of the month for your third exam before we have the third part of the more operational side. So this is where, you know, we get into the moving from the theory to how we apply it. So how we do that in practice. So it's important to work on that. And I was just on a call discussing how we would look at the operations and evaluate them and talk about what, you know, how well certain programs do and stuff. So, so this guidelines that like the World Meteorological Organization puts out on how you're supposed to do these operations in general. And that's what we talk about. So let me see if we start talking about dry ice, if I can download that. Any questions? Oops, did that wrong. Before we start talking about dry ice. Any questions online? Anybody want to pop up? And we get the lecture going in. Slideshow. Start from first slide. Okay. I got my little picture I found for some dry ice here. We see all the vapor that comes off of it. So the first question is, what is dry ice? So it's frozen carbon dioxide. So remember, we can have all states of matter in three different states: solid, liquid, and gas. So if we take and make a solid out of carbon dioxide, which is in the air, and we freeze it. Anybody know what the concentration of carbon dioxide is in the atmosphere?
Isn't it like 400 parts per million?
Yeah. Yeah, 400, because that's what's been increasing. So I was on top of Mauna Loa where they started measuring carbon dioxide in the late 1950s, one of the first global sites to look at that. So if you ever see the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere, the longest record is from top of Hawaii. But it's a long rib gas in the atmosphere. But it's a low component compared to something like water vapor, nitrogen, oxygen, are the main contributors. But so it does not melt into the liquid, but evaporates directly into the gas. That's why you see on the picture there, you see the solid and the gas coming off of that. So there's no liquid there. And remember what we call that? Sublimation. And if you, you know, a lot of things like gases, if you put it at a high enough pressure, you can liquefy it. And like I said, this is in photosynthesis. So there's actually an up and down with the increase and decrease for the north and south hemisphere. So when's the lowest carbon dioxide measurements? In summer, yeah. Okay, that's the right way to answer. So if you say July or something, then you got to specify the hemisphere. So, and there's more of a trend in the northern hemisphere because there's more vegetation that takes up the carbon dioxide. Soda water, you can have carbon dioxide. You know, you put that in, and that's what makes the soda pops and stuff, or soda water, bubbly and fizzly. History goes way back to the beginning. Dry ice has been used as a season agent, as Schaefer here, Vince Schaefer, one of our pioneers, kind of fell upon the idea when he was trying to lower the temperature of his chamber back in 1946, dumped 3 pounds of dry ice pellets and from an aircraft and made a racetrack pattern. If you go back, remember our history that we talked about before. So So how does it work in terms of crowd seeding? Glaciogenic forms ice crystals by cooling water drops below minus 40. So this is where you have the homogeneous freezing. So you can form the ice particles because, I say here, I guess I didn't tell you, it's very cold. Like, have it someplace here. Anyway. So well below the minus 40. So it can freeze everything very rapidly when you have it. Supercooled crowding vicinities freezes water droplets even in the absence of ice nuclei. So you get that cold enough that you don't need the ice nuclei. So the CO2 is not a nuclei themselves because you don't need one. Remember, ice forms and can form just homogeneously just with nothing but the gas and the ice starts to form if it gets cold enough. And then, of course, if you get the ice crystals to form, they cause the water droplets to evaporate and they will grow. So this makes ice crystals that can get big enough and fall. And we know that as the cold rain process, right? That involves the ice. I cut my ice off on my slide. Where do we dispense it? Yes, usually dropped into the upper regions of the clouds, dry ice pellets, top seeding, they say ice nuclei or dry ice into these top regions. Get up here where it's really cold, go through, you can put in the dry ice pellets. So we'll talk a little bit more about the top seeding and the crowd base seeding. And of course, the 32 degrees Fahrenheit is your 0 Celsius where you have your freezing line. So we drop that in to the tops of the clouds. I was just thinking of this morning. Why would it be not good to put in the like the updraft regions below the freezing? Yeah, but it's going to sublimate. But what's that? Why is the updraft rifting? Because it's warm. So if you put this cold stuff in there, right, it's not going to help it. So we want to put it there where we're going to get the ice, not just cool the updrafts. So maybe we could have some suppression of the updrafts if we wanted to do that. But it's pretty hard to get enough energy to cool it. But it's very cold, so we put it there. When to use dry ice, direct injection with a seeding aircraft, penetrating after near crowd top. Once they grow to the minus 10 level, and so you put them where you want to nucleate the ice, put them in there. And if you put this, you know, in the growing feeder cells, you can have a continuous source of condensate that's transported up from below. So you got this continuous repregnation of the ice. So what about amount of dry ice? So the amount is proportional to the amount of liquid water. And I have a picture here. I think Lizzie, she sort of her dry ice hopper and filling it in North Dakota. A lot of programs don't use dry ice. It's a little bit harder to handle and to have on the aircraft. Here's a picture. You can dispense a lot of it, you know, 40 pounds a minute, but the preferred rate is just 5 ounces per second, because you just use up all your material very quickly if you dispense it very fast for that reason. So you don't want to dispense it too fast, but at the right amount. And it's independent of the temperature. It's not like on the ice nuclei that gets changes with temperature, right? The activation, how much you need, how well it works is kind of independent of the temperature. It depends upon the amount of liquid water. So that's unlike AGI or other ice nuclei. So you get a lot of crystals. Again, these orders of magnitude, 10 to the 11th, 10 to the 12th. Oh, what's 10 to the 12th now? What? 10 to the, yeah, is that a billion? I'm trying to get a million is 16, or is six, right? Oh, that's more than a trillion. So I don't know. Once you get to these big numbers, I don't even know what they are anymore. So again, you can get a lot of ice crystals, but you have a big volume to this crowd, so you need to make that. Okay. We have that. You dispense it. This is another picture of a dry ice hopper in a plane. Usually you put it in the back where you can get to it, fill it up. This is where I get to the temperature. Handling of dry ice, it's extremely cold. Okay. And stuff. So it's kind of like liquid nitrogen. Has anybody seen the liquid nitrogens and stuff? So has anybody seen this? They have a trick, right? You can pour liquid nitrogen over your hand. So you do it like this, and you can pour the nitrogen over it and have the liquid nitrogen go off your hand. But if you cup your hand like this, so the liquid nitrogen pools in there, it'll burn you. So people that do that, you know, they have little YouTube videos or something, where you can play a lot of tricks with liquid nitrogen. It's like, how can you put that so cold, but the gas just pulls off, it doesn't pull up. So the same thing here, you know, with dry ice, it's extremely cold, and if you keep it on your skin, cause damage to it. Yes.
You don't have to worry about the dry sublimating like in the aircraft, like producing like CO2.
Well, you can produce it there. I don't think it's a hazard to have the CO2 in the aircraft in terms of, I guess you're thinking a bit more like you get too much CO2 in the aircraft. I guess that could be a hazard. If I'm trying to think of how much that is in terms of what it is. But I think if you look at these, they're sealed up in there. And you would have to get it released very quickly to do that. So I guess that's a potential hazard, but I don't think it's that will sublimate that quickly if you got it all confined particularly if you seal it and stuff too. That's why you want to keep it sealed in these containers. But that's a good question. I haven't really thought about that hazard. So it's more of just having it get it, you know, disappear. But I think the major cause is to get it on your hand, your skin, your eye. That's why you need gloves, protective goggles. So it says dryers will sublimate 5 to 10 pounds every 24 hours in a typical chest. So, you know, 10 pounds of dry ice, you know, 24 hours. I'm not sure how much, we should do a calculation to see how much that is compared to the, how much CO2 is in the cabin and stuff. But I think it's recirculated enough that it's not a, a big hazard because of the low amount of material that would get in there versus the recirculation. It's not a, a rapid event that would occur. So even if you open it up and you just let it there, I don't think it would, it won't fill up the cabin. As you can see, maybe in the next picture here, you know, people, I think this one's not open, but you can look at it in the, when they're preparing before a launch. You know, you want to remove any water, snow, water, ice, plying a load in a hopper. And I personally, I've seen these hoppers, but I've actually never flown on an aircraft where we actually dispensed it. Because most of the programs I've worked on have not used these. So you want to load it before launch. So they'll, you know, cause deposition of water. Ice may freeze. You know, ice comes from the air into clumps and make it hard to disperse. So, you know, you want it in a pallet type of shape so it's easier to disperse. So we got some older pictures here. Showing kind of like the Hanrin, maybe it's not the best one, I don't see gloves, but they have the tongs to, you know, they're not Hanrin with the ice. So, hard to dig. Somebody come in. Any questions online? Pause. Any questions in the audience? Yes.
So if the dry ice does come in contact with water or something and it clumps up, is the point scrapped or like, how does that?
Yeah, it depends how much you can get to, you know, how clumpy it is. Can you still dispense it? And that, and I'm not 100% sure. But I think usually they do have use of dry ice with combinations of flares also. So I think usually they have the dry ice hopper and flare. So you could use one, one or the other there. So anyway, a couple cool pictures here. You can see the vapor coming off of it when you have in there, and you know there's a, you know, if you have in a well ventilated area, you're not getting a lot of CO2 in there. And I think this in the North Dakota project, there's only one aircraft that has the hopper. believe. And then you store the dry ice with the lid shut, seal it. And then we have a note for mosquitoes and stuff get in there and we make a mess. So it's a little bit of the handling of this, right? Lizzie said that, you know, she used it in Bowman, so that's where they had it for the North Dakota project and have to load that up into the hopper from the storage before the flights. Yes.
Do you know if mosquitoes and gnats are drawn to the gnats at dry ice like they are to
I don't know if they, you know, I think they just get into the area. Someone have to tell me that. I mean, I think they just get killed, and but maybe I have not actually, like I said, worked with it too much, but you would have these, you know, in the summertime. Maybe it's a cool place and the mosquitoes will like that cool because it's hot outside. And then I think they usually store it in a garage or shed. You know, it's not in a airtight or a place. So there's probably garage doors and other things so people, you know, insects and mosquitoes can get in at night and stuff. So, advantages of dry ice works immediately, relatively fast. Creates high concentrations of crystals. And then it works at any temperature colder than zero. You need the supercooled water. And, you know, you don't have this dependence upon the effectiveness of the AGI. So you can use it earlier in the development of the storms. Smaller, warmer crowds can be treated more effectively with dry ice than with like ejectable flares. So, you know, when you put in the dry ice, you can get that activation, start and form the ice crystals, try to get some of that latent heat into the crowds. So again, I think, you know, you kind of use that in combination. So you're seeding, maybe you get up there to begin with, it's still a little bit warm. So you put some of the dry ice in there before you get the crowds to a cold enough temperatures where the AGI would be effective. So experiments, research, CDM super cool drawers. You can look at, you know, chambers. You know, you can see that it produces the supercooled, produces ice and supercooled fog. You know, look at what they are. And then you'll get this deposition of ice. But as far as I know, there really hasn't been a whole lot of research just using dry ice. It should work as effectively as the AGI because you make the ice crystals and you do the same material. So, and then we have some references for this. So, like I said, I had never worked a project where we had it. You know, it takes some logistics to get to the locations. So that could be hard in some developing countries, some locations. to have access to it and the storage. So that's kind of the drawback, but it does have the advantage that it's independent of temperature, works at warmer temperatures, but you still need super cool drops. So. Questions? Look at that ice out there. Snowflakes coming down. Wish it was July, it's still enough. So what's the only month that it has snowed in North Dakota? August.
Oh, it's July. So.
Okay. I think it was August in North Dakota. I don't know. So I haven't, I guess I've seen it in May and September. I haven't seen it that much. So questions. Dry ice is one of the materials. And I'll have to get some more pictures and some other stuff to do that. So trying to get through the seeding agents and the equipment today. So, oh, I got a chat question. There we go. Hey, look at this. Oh, they just said, yeah, they can hear me. Okay. Put questions in the chat. I got it up now. Anybody else online got any questions? You can type them in. So that's the advantage if you come in online and all this stuff. Instead of watching the videos, you can ask questions. So, although it can be embarrassing. I was on a seminar and I was confused about the one of my friends had privately chatted me to a question and I wanted to reply back to him, but I forgot to privately reply back and I replied to everybody in the group. And the moderator was like, what's that question? No question, sorry. So technology. Let's see how we can do that. Okay. I want to try to see if I can get through all this stuff today. Should we take a break here and look and see if I rewrote my image here, how much it's changed. See, Grand Forks is right here. This is our border for North Dakota. And Minneapolis is down here, Duluth. So let's see here if I go and reload this. Okay, I got the loop. Get a new loop here that it made or not. Yeah, that's a little bit different. Reload the single loop here. So that big snow band, look at this. Just to the south of us, this, we have these snow bands in here. That gives us a big heavy. See, it's really coming down now. Getting more of that snow with the blues here instead of the green. Let's go on to seeding agents is the next topic. Format, slideshow stuff. And we have to hide. Okay. Yeah, okay. The three lectures, I gotta make sure I have the like one. So dispenser of seeding agents. Here I have a picture with a single rack of silver iodide flares. burning praise for us.
So
what a bit. So that's these burning praise prayers. And then you see the little, like the last week I bought one and Emmanuel's son is cable. They're hooked up here to these connectors. And so then there's the electrical connectors that go through here, go back through, you see the cable up here, and that goes into the aircraft. So you give it that little current to set the igniter cap off. But if these aren't hooked up here, there's a connector here, you have to have it hooked up to actually have the flares working. So dry ice, we talked about in the previous one, is almost exclusively for airborne release. Typically, you don't have the super cool droplets unless you're in fog right near the surface. Put in a hopper. A hopper is this, it's a mechanical dispension agent. dispense in pellet form. Pellets fall from the aircraft, so you have a hole in the bottom of the airplane. Through the crowd. So if it's going to fall, you must be high enough to get the point of nucleation. So you got to be above the 0 degree temperature. Put it in the supercooled with water. And like I said, it's that keeping it in that small pellet form that you can dispense can be problematic for that. So you basically just release that from the bottom of the airplane through the hopper at a particular, at the rate that you want. And I think, again, you just turn it on and turn it off when you want. So the other coolant agent you can use is liquid propane. You can sometimes use this for fog at the surface. And I got this nice picture. The obvious thing is that it's flammable and it's technically feasible from the aircraft, but not really used. But it can cool like dry ice. So the other one is the release of the ice nuclei that can be from the ground. And it can, because it's from a smoke. You know, when you burn this, it's like, you know, you get the small smoke, just like burning a piece of paper. So you can do it from the ground and you can do it from the air. The advantage of the ground is it's typically less expensive. And the advantage of the airborne is that it can easily target. And there's always questions about, you know, different methods, and maybe you have different companies. One might specialize in ground release. Another one specializes in aircraft release. And then you got some sponsor that wants to know, okay, which one should I go with here? And so the one will say, hey, my advantage is I can do it for less money. And the other company says, yes, but you're actually not getting material where you want and then targets. And so you're not being cost effective. So there's always that argument. So got another picture here. Of a rack, and this one has both the two types of burn and praise, the smaller diameter ones are the AGI, and the big ones are the hygroscopic flares. So you could do these, and you could put them both in at crowd base, Or you could do some crawl-based seeding and then go up and do some AGI. So they make the racks so you can put either or on it. So one goes inside, one goes on the outside. So, and you just ignite them, burn them off. So you got to load these up, obviously, before the flights, get them installed. Ground release of silver iodine. It can be done since it's normally a smoke. And I think I'm, this one repeats it. Okay, I got the same thing repeated with two different pictures. So I guess I want to make sure you really know the advantages and disadvantages of these. So here's a ground generator up in the mountains. So you can have these. You got rid of boxes that control them on and off. Solar powered to release the material. And usually when you put these, there's a lot of snow because it's in the winter time. And the usually the acetone burners burn acetone with the silver iodine dissolved in the acetone. And you have this in the boundary layer, where we're 1 to 2 kilometers of the atmosphere. And then the material lifts up and gets up into the cloud with the updraft. So you have to have these high enough to actually get that upslope flow. So yeah, what a bit better picture of this on the next one, where you have them. And usually this is kind of just the tops of the mountains where you put them. So you really want to put them up in the mountain where you have this updraft that will carry it. So siting these can be very important. And it's better to site them where they're going to be effective instead of just where it's easy and convenient. Oh, I got to... somewhere that lives down in the valley, we just put it down there. It won't necessarily get the upslope into the clouds. And right now you can do a lot of atmospheric modeling. You can find the best spots. And of course it changes then with the wind flow. And this is very common in wintertime orographical seeding. So they're finishing up now. Typically, like April 15th is kind of when the winter programs end in the U.S. So they're finishing that up this week. And the model is that you have these, the winds that carry them up the mountains into the orographical clouds. And then you have the snow that falls on the mountains, and then you increase the snowpack. The idea. So there's been, I guess I got a couple pictures, some more historical measurements of, just thinking about how this disperses with distance downwind with these log scales, 1, 10, 100 kilometers, how much it disperses horizontally. So, if you go 1 kilometer down, you always got a 10 kilometer horizontal dispersion, with the downwind of the material. So it doesn't take too many kilometers to get it dispersed. But you kind of have these plumes that go across. And it depends on, it's always downwind. So when the storms come across the mountains, they can come from different directions. Problems, photo deactivation, if you have a lot of sun, can cause AGI not to be effective. And I keep saying this, trajectory uncertainty. You know, how well are you going to get that to the target area you want? And if you place them below inversion levels, you may not get them up. There's temperature inversions. You may not get that material up into the cloud. The air may just not come from the surface up to get that. So you really need these to be high enough in the mountains so that is not an issue. If you're down in a valley, a lot of times the valleys are these capped inversions and you don't have the wind that flows from the valley up. So that's why some of the valleys are big major pollution areas, like Fairbanks, Alaska. They have all these mountains around them, a lot of wind, but you keep that temperature and all the pollution from the city inside the city because you trap it there. Questions, comments? It's kind of fun, I think, like people that go out to service these, but a lot of times they put them out there in the beginning of the season, and then they hope that it will last for the season, and then they remotely turn them on.
How long do these people burn? Is it just however long the storm's gonna last?
They burn them in like 3-hour increments or something.
Oh, okay.
You know, but they'll burn them for, you know, I think a day or two. You know, it depends on how long the storms last. So you really have to monitor, and that's what the meteorologists do here. They really monitor, and a lot of times they'll have like radiometers and other measurements in the valley that looks at the mountains to see, okay, do we have super cooled water in the clouds? Is the wind direction right? So the meteorologists can monitor this. They can use models and say, okay, now is the time to turn this generator on. And they usually have, 10, 20 of these in a project area, depending on how big they are. So they can be monitoring a lot of these. So it's a lot, you know, more efficient once you get them there. You just, and I don't know if, it's all satellite remote controlled. You can turn them on and off. You get the flow rate. You can adjust them. I don't think there's any that automatically turn on. Like you could have a sensor that measures the liquid water. But they can put liquid water sensors on the instrument. But a lot of times you want to know what liquid water is once you get back up into the clouds, right? Because your liquid water is up here, but your generator is here. But sometimes, depending on the storm, you know, these can get a lot of super cold water and ice up. And then also these can get buried as the snow accumulates too. So you see they're on high towers and stacks. So they put them up there so that as the snowpack goes over the winter, it increases.
Do ski hills exist to increase snowfall?
So in Colorado, they have programs for along the ski, major Colorado ski areas and that. So they can use this, and it's a general method. But a lot of times it's more for the, you know, out west in the Colorado River Basin and stuff, or just getting enough snowpack. And so and there's been studies, you know, how much can we increase this with these generators? And because you can't always see every storm. So, you know, how much do you look at that in terms of percentage of the snowfall per year? Do you look at a total amount? So you can look at it like, you know, cubic feet of water that these produce, and it's a huge number. And you can look at the cost of what that is to the users. But the other thing is, it's usually not, if you look at because you can't seed out of clouds. You might be able to seed like 30% of the storms. You can't seed out of time. And then you may increase them 30% by maybe 5 or 10%. So overall, you know, you only may be making a couple percentage increase of the all the snow stuff. So that's the targeting part. And that's why some people would say, well, if you want to target better, aircraft are more effective because you can go into different areas, move around a little bit more than a single-sided generator. So, and some programs use both. Where am I here? Acetone burners, you can put them on the end of the aircraft. So we had one of these up over spring break. We turned it on, so I got to actually see, you know, they poured the solution into them, have an igniter, and you can generate that, fill it up. So they, on these end burners here, there's that, you know, there's a tank in here, and then there's ram air that and then you ignite them. So that's one way to dispense the silver iodine. The other one is burning praise furs. And the third is ejectable pyrotechnic furs. So this is the ejectable furs. They go down underneath the aircraft. So updrafts can carry this material further up in the cloud. So you can see the cloud base with the generators on, and you can get these up into the clouds with cloud base release of the silver iodine. So you do that. A lot of times when you do this, you're only really affecting a couple percentage of the updraft because, you know, these clouds are big and your airplane is a lot smaller compared to that. So, you know, you can fly underneath and get these up in there. How much turbulence, how much it spreads out is kind of a question for these. And still want to do some more studying of the turbulence and the spreading of this, but and here it kind of shows kind of like a plume rising, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. But you don't get a whole, you know, you're not affecting the whole type of the cloud because you're not seeding the whole area. Ejectable pyrotechnics, I didn't show you any of these. The aircraft, flies above the desired level. So you want to get this up higher. So you get to minus 12, minus 15 or something. You don't necessarily even have to be in the clouds if the material falls down through them. But they typically only fall a couple thousand feet. It disperses the material. Instead of having a line like you do on the aircraft material, you can have a big spread out plume type of thing. So, and because the burning praise one, you just burn it as you fly along, it gives you more of a line. Oops, what happened? Oh, sorry, I hit the wrong button on my slide. So I guess that's the end. That's the ejectable. So basically, the materials for the AGI, if I recap, you know, wingtip acetone burners, generators, burn in place, furs and ejectable furs. It's a way to dispense the silver iodine. So, and then you know, nice picture of the rain shaft here with the in burner. So they usually call them in burners, ejectable BIPs, BIPs, for the types of materials. So questions?
We're dropping these flares.
Yeah, you don't want another airplane. I think they have 2,000 or 3,000 foot separation. At least, I forget, it's probably even more than that. But you know, you want to make sure that there's no one below you.
Oh, for people on the ground, or is it more like a firework shell?
Yeah, it really dispenses, and I don't know, the shells are light. And it's the casing is not, when you look at these, it's not the casing that's ejected, it's just the material. So there's not a solid piece that falls. You know, it's not a metal, it's just the stuff inside the casing. So there's it's not this metal piece. There's an igniter here, and then the stuff comes out of that metal. That's what falls down. So, yeah, it's kind of a in that. So, and I mean, the same thing like with these. I mean, you kind of saw the bird in place flares. No, I don't have any here. You know, it's the material inside of them. There's a cardboard on the outside. So that's not the materials inside that burns, but the whole cardboard burns. However, there are these, and these ones, there are one of these practice caps that fall off for the light. So I guess they get out. And I think you just usually let them just fall off, but you can take the caps off too on them. So they just protect the igniter that's in there. So the one I showed you the other day didn't have a cap on them. The cap protects the igniter, because that's what happens if the flares don't start burning, it's the igniters that don't work. We had some of them happen. So, all right, questions? Should I reload my slide once more? It's Tuesday, we can keep going. All it is snowing. So look at the flakes are getting bigger and bigger out there. All right, 23 here. Get that back. Oh, my internet. There we go, look at that. Now we're a little bit more, we can zoom right in here for our North Dakota. See, now we have right here, a little bit south of US 2. How far over can I get? Well, here's Grand Forks. So we got this nice band of snow. So it's moving kind of slowly here. For this, I guess they stopped my video. And you can see that moving up from the south here, and how long it sits there, some of these areas, and then it dissipates. But you know, it looks like they're getting probably snow here. And sometimes you can, like I say, you can go look at the rain snow line and see what's raining. I'm sure this is all rain down here in Minneapolis. But so okay. Okay, let's see if we can keep going in here and see if I can at least start this last presentation. Because who knows, if it keeps snowing till Thursday, we won't have class. So senior equipment and methods. So a little bit different. Maybe combine it, but and any questions online? I don't see anything in the chat. I always put questions there. You know, stop my video or stop it. I don't know. Guess I can do that. I still got the screen shared. Okay. Equipment and methods. So this is based on not one of Mike Pellet's, but a different set of material. Oh, and move this over too, so that gets out of the way. And airborne versus ground seeding, more discussion of that. Because the seeding, the dispensing of material must be done at the right place, time, right amount, and you have a cost consideration. And particularly in the convective storms, the timing is very important. Get there fast enough when the storms are developing. If you go too late, when it's dissipating, you're losing that updraft, you're not going to be effective. So I guess I got a, you know, good ground base, crowd seeding, good for questions, you know, benefits, disadvantages between these. Kind of somewhat of a repeat from before. But maybe this is a good comparison when you can see them side by side. So ground-based seeding is less costly, lower maintenance, fewer people. You know, one person can measure all the and monitor all these ground generators. They can service them in the summer when it's off season, deploy them, monitor it. So you can do an operations with just a couple people. Disadvantages, again, important where you put them. And you might not dispense the materials. Does anybody see any other benefits, disadvantages that you might think of for ground-based seeding versus aircraft?
You have removal.
Movable ones, huh? Like a ground base that may be movable. I haven't heard anybody trying that. The problem is that I haven't done it either. I had one of the people that was on my committee member for my PhD, he would go out back skiing in the mountains and stuff. Has anybody, I've gone to the mountains in Wyoming and Colorado and stuff, but not in the middle of the winter. I've been up there even in July. You go up in the mountains and the snow is still melting. So they get huge amounts of snow up there, visibility. So I think the logistics of moving them is just very complicated. Maybe we need an autonomous vehicle or something. You could put it on a, you know, some type of, you know, mobile platform, but then, you know, the snow sinks in and you know, you would have to have something that you could And once you get these big, huge amounts of snow, how are you going to move something? You know, if you get 6 inches or a couple feet of snow in there, and then it's hard to get up there. You know, I don't know if you ever seen the pictures of the. So I haven't heard anybody doing that in terms of trying to move them. Aircraft, you can place the seating agent in exact location. You can regulate the amount. You know, you can regulate somewhat the amounts too for the ground ones, but you can't necessarily get them in the locations. You know, you can get more with complete coverage of the storm. You're not limited by one location. More costly. And then, of course, the aircraft, you have a lot of maintenance issues, right? They're a lot more complicated equipment than the ground seaters. Anybody see any advantages, any more advantages, disadvantages to the aircraft?
Easier to replenish an aircraft.
Yeah, easy to replenish. You have the you can get to it, easy to fix in some ways, but you have more maintenance, you know. So is it easier to have, easier to do maintenance, but you have to do it more often and more? I mean, it just goes back to the costliness of it. But, you know, if you have one of these generators go down, you know, maybe down for quite a while.
With aircraft operations, you can go to the storm as opposed to the storm having.
Yep, you can go and cover a bigger area. I think that's more complete seating of a storm. You know, you can get in there, you can get where you want. You know, bigger areas, you can be more mobile. You can be where you want to be for the storm. You're not fixed in the one location. So now we talk about top seating versus base seating. So tops is in the super cool cloud, near the tops of the storm. You can get up there, you have good visual cues. Typically you could see the storms, you're not always in them. So you go in, you do your seating, come back around, you can watch how it's moving. You can get at the right temperature. And if you want, you can really sometimes see the seating effect. You can go through a storm, see how much liquid water is in there, just get it either with an instrument or just how much on a windshield. See that there's water, then if you go back through it after you've seated it, you'll see the ice form. So you can do in-crowd sampling. So that's one reason why I've been involved, you know. We look at how much liquid water is in the storm. What's the temperature? You know, do you have an effectiveness of this? Do you see the ice forming? So disadvantage, no information of crowd base appearance. Tops can be embedded. Difficult to do at night. It can be turbulent too. Penetrating these tops. And you may not have as much dispersion because you're putting it right in the storm, not letting the updrafts bring it up and dispersing it throughout the crowd. So it's that question of, you know, is it better to put it right where you want, or is it better to spread it out? Hopefully you get the materials in there. So the tools, basically you have wind kit generators, pyrotechnics, which are the flare racks. So either AGI or hygroscopic, and then a chemical device like a dry ice hopper to dispense them. There's actually a couple different types of generators. for this. I mean, you have quite a bit of, you know, capacity to this, 8 gallons. Yes, 7 gallons that's usable. You can set the flow rate different. And this generator you can use for base seeding, you know, burn the generator out of time on them. Probably generators next. So it uses pressurized air. Capacity, you gotta charge these at the ground, you get a flow rate. What a bit different in terms of so you can use compressed air instead of ram air. I guess that's the major difference, you know, the ram air that you would get from this frying with the inlet here. Just having a tube and having the airflow through there and using that versus using the compressed air. So a couple of different types of generators. So these chemicals that you put in the generators, they are strong oxidizers. So what do I mean by oxidizer? This is a chemical term from way back when. You know what oxygen is, right? So when you burn, what do?
Material with oxygen.
Yeah. So you need a lot of oxygen. So if you have an efficient burning process, you have a lot of oxygen. So that's when you combustion your engines, you have to have a right amount of oxygen to mix in. So they put a lot of these in so that you get a highly efficient burning process, very predictable. But these can obviously be a fire hazard. So you don't want to have any issues because you have jet fuel and you have other things on the airplane too. So you have to be aware of these hazards. Pyrotechnic devices. Be careful that you wear gloves and goggles. I got the wrong title on this. Sorry. This is for the material for the acetone and the material. If you're using these chemicals, filling it up, don't get it on your hands. Don't smoke around the chemicals. Don't use it in a closed area. So basic precautions, kind of similar to gasoline or jet fuel. You would have to use this material. Pyrotechnics, usually you typically have silver iodine. You have burning brace and ejectables are the two types of flares. So these ones are the burning brace. You have the silver iodines and the other ones can use hygroscopic potassium chloride and other materials. And these flares are not just one material. The silver iodine is not 100% of the flare material. So there's oxidizers that's in there that's a major component. So, you know, if you take the weight of the flare material, it's less than, I'll just say 25%, that's actually the silver iodine. But it's a significant percentage. Burn and trace, these are the ones that are ignited. you can have these 12 racks, dispensers, one on each ring. We get 24 on the aircraft, you know, back of the wings. So everything's behind the wind. It goes behind the airplane. So you put these typically on the racks. I don't have a picture. I should get a double rack. They have two of these now that instead of having 12, you have 24. So you have another set of these above so that you can have more material. The AGI first, you can burn like 2 minutes, burn just over 2 minutes for the silver iodide flares. The hygroscopic ones are quite a bit longer at 3 to 4 minutes. Okay, belly to airplane to put the material in. You have to load these up beforehand. You gotta make sure you store the materials, put them on the aircraft, dry area. Sometimes these people keep these for years. If you don't keep them dry, you have potential for that. Next, pyrotechnics, so you gotta have treatment for how you store them, ship them. Be careful not to damage them and don't ignite them and stuff, so. And then the last thing is the dry ice with the hoppers. You put 150 pounds in there, very cold. And that's kind of a repeat for the last one. And then the same kind of repeats of that. And then I'll stop here, and I didn't quite get that, but this is the last figure here with reaction times of the different materials. So, I think the burners on the rack and then the different types of AGI fluors that are mixed with different compounds and then the dry ice. So the main thing is the dry ice reacts very quickly. So thanks, we made it through with 3 of these today. Very quickly. Okay. I'll stop my recording. And it's still snowing. It's big, heavy snow. Stop recording. Leave this.